all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitloh.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wiscommon Sense up here on the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's a beautiful, though smoky day up north. Very smoky, actually. It's 59 degrees up here on the lake on our home base, 93.5 The Tap, along the Civic Media Radio Network on this Monday, July 24th. It is 61 in Green Bay right now. Amory coming in at 59. Madison reporting 62, La Crosse 63, Janesville 63 degrees as well. And again, a combination of fog and mist and smoke and haze, depending on where you are in the state this morning. Here's what's on tap on this Monday. We'll start with the Barbenheimer effect. As we usually do on Mondays, we'll review which Up North news stories are getting the most clicks and views, but we can't overlook the two movies that are dwarfing everything else in summer viewing. So we will check out reaction to Greta Gerwig's Barbie and Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer. Plus, we will review those more Wisconsin-based views on stories, including who's got the best fish fry in the state and whether people think former President Trump's grasp on reality might be slipping. Oh, we'll also talk about those monster-sized postcards you might be getting targeting Tammy Baldwin, all about drug prices, and Twitter continues to circle the drain with its latest move overnight. In our second hour, State Representative Alex Jors will join us. He was one of nearly 100 state-level leaders from around the country who were invited to the White House last week to discuss ways to make quality childcare more accessible and affordable. And that's the tease. Because to write anything else would mean you have to wonder what historians are going to think when they look back at the year 2023 and how Republicans were against accessible, affordable, quality child care and health care and good wages and fighting pollution. But they are boycotting Barbie. They are shooting cans of Bud Light. They are banning rainbows. So both sides of U.S. politics are equally bad? Maybe? Along the way, we'd love to hear if you saw one or both of the movies over the weekend. We normally have Kristen Lyerly around Mondays at 6:30. She's not able to visit with us on Monday this week. And so we'd love to have some of your phone calls in the 6:30 segment, 844-967-2789. Did you see one of the movies? Did you see both? Was that a good strategy? Which one would you like to see more? We'd love to have your thoughts on all of that, or you can shoot us a note by email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com, or you can comment on Facebook, where we show up on several different pages, the Facebook pages for Up North News, for Civic Media, for Bull Falls Radio, that's in Wausau, and 93.5 The Tap in Chippewa Falls. Our first movie review later this hour will come to us courtesy of Aaron Zommers, who joins us now from Madison. Which one did you go see, Aaron, one or both?
I wanted to go see both, but my weekend ended up being busier than I anticipated, so I only saw Barbie.
So, you know what? I think you're going to have time to see both. I think they're going to be around for a while. When you consider that there's the actor's strike and now the writer's strike, and I think these... I don't know the exact movie release calendar, but this might be the biggest of the batch for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. So we'll hear more about that. And we'd, again, love to have your thoughts on the movies coming up a little bit later on this morning as well. We are in the last week of July, and so we have the Civic Pints blood collection campaign to tell you about. Again, Civic Pints is the hashtag when you give a pint of blood at a reputable blood donation center. You take a selfie, you put that selfie on social media with the hashtag Civic Pints. The social media gurus here at Civic Media will see it and enter you in a drawing that could include brewer's tickets and so much more. And you can learn more at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. I was off on Friday. I'll be off again this Friday for our annual big week of having the entire extended family here under one roof. And given how late they tend to stay up, I think none of them are hearing me right now at home underneath the big roof. If so, they're cussing grandpa into his pillow. But see, I've got the way our Wi-Fi network is set up, I get little notices on my phone as different devices join. It's kind of how I knew, you know, like one batch had rolled up into the driveway. Suddenly I got all these pings that these devices had joined the network that had been on there before. And Aaron, I hope you, I don't know if you'll sympathize or laugh along with it, but when I got up at 4:15, I noticed I got a notice from that a new Oculus virtual reality goggles device has joined your network 1 hour ago. So at least I know how late the boys downstairs were playing video games, or at least when they started.
Wow.
Not sure exactly when they ended, but don't you remember when your summer vacation, you could stay up till the cows come home, you know, whatever it took. I mean, you didn't have the high-tech toys, but still the ability to do that with your summer vacation, I'm a little envious.
It was pretty nice. Yeah. I remember those not so distant days for me yet.
Yeah. I mean, those boys are not going to appear upstairs here till lunchtime, but you know, this is their week to just goof off here at grandma grandpa's. We'll go for boat rides and things like that. And it's going to be great, but you know, it does mean that if they're even a little bit susceptible to hearing this radio show early in the morning, well, they know that's on them. When you're putting in your VR goggles at 3 o'clock in the morning. We've got a lot of headlines and things to talk about as well coming up on this Monday edition of Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be back in just a sec. Wherever you are across Wisconsin right now, you're up north.
If you're coming with me, you need nerves of steel. Cause I take corners on two wheels.
It's always nice to start off the week with Charita Booker, our social media manager at Up North News. You can find a lot of what she does on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Look for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI. But also Twitter, or not Twitter. What am I trying to think of here? That other one, TikTok.
TikTok.
Boy, oh boy, Grandpa. Starting off the week strong here. TikTok does not have the WI. Just look for Up North News on there. Charita, how are you?
Good. How are you, Pat?
All right. Well, let's save the old man here, but we're jumping right into my weirdness to people wondering if Donald Trump's getting weirder. And again, now this is very subjective, but when you compile the list of stories that get the most engagements, the most likes, the most comments, clearly the Kia Vakil story about Trump's kind of off kilter comments lately, it's getting a lot of attention.
Yeah. So earlier this week, Trump suggested that President Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, should get the death penalty for paying his taxes late. He also called President Biden a crackhead.
Well, this from a guy who, like Kia notes, has never shied away from personal attacks, from ugly attacks. But there just seems to be more of a tone of desperation in this. I mean, this is somebody who's been indicted twice already. Certainly appears to be much more to come. But this is also a guy who, going back to Barack Obama, was one of the original big spreaders of the birther lie. And I mean, he's even his tweet led to, wasn't it like somebody showing up at the former president's home because of a Trump post?
I believe so.
I mean, he showed up armed, you know. This is somebody whose behavior got him kicked off social media. And then he had to form his own little tiny social media company. And I think a lot of folks hoped he would, you know, ride into the sunset, but doesn't look like that's going to be the case at all. Comments are going both ways, I would imagine.
Absolutely. And people are so used to him speaking recklessly, like that some of this comes to no surprise.
No, it doesn't. But clearly it is something that people still want to engage with one way or the other. And so that's an article that you'll find on our website at upnorthnewswi.com. Next on the list, this one's somewhat troubling to me. This is, again, about AI, artificial intelligence, which, I mean, it sounded so theoretical like just a year ago, and now it seems like it's almost everywhere.
And not everybody's happy with what AI does when you put things in. Although I would say, you know, garbage in, garbage out. So when you put in, you know, something that looks like it's going to come out as a caricature, don't be surprised when it does. What are we talking about in this instance?
Okay, so BuzzFeed asked AI what Europeans think Americans look like in every state. And you guys have to head over to our Instagram or Facebook to check out what they think Wisconsinites look like. So the images of an overweight man sitting at a table with several types of cheeses and looks like a 40 ounce of beer.
Yep. Yep. And wearing a toque, you know, and he's got the flannel over the t-shirt, which is probably a Packer t-shirt. But I mean, and he's not just overweight. I mean, this man is morbidly obese and, you know, kind of making a face at the camera. And again, when I say garbage in, garbage out, I mean, when you ask people, in this case, ask Europeans what they think Americans look like in various states, you know, don't be surprised when you get that, because people like to give, you know, smart aleck answers. And, you know, the comments in there, I'm sure some of them took issue, and I'm sure others probably pointed to people from other states.
Yeah. And it's very stereotypical. So people weren't happy about what they felt like they suggested of from people from Wisconsin. But yeah, there's other states in there we have people from Illinois, Texas, that or what they think they look like. So you got to head over and take a look at that.
Oh, yeah. I was just looking at those ones right now. And again, they're funny pictures. So as long as people take it as an exercise in humor and try to keep a tongue in cheek, or in this case, a hunk of cheese, you know, in cheek, I guess that we will be okay. All right. It's time again for the match game. We've been doing this, feels like, for a couple of weeks now. And both Christina talks about it from, you know, the uplift segment of stories coming up in the newsletter, or graphics or stories. And then people see these as you post them on social media, and they love to provide their input. What do we got this time around?
So we did a fill in the blank last week, and we asked you what your favorite fish fry was in Wisconsin.
And very deliberate. Blank, yes. Has the best fish fry in Wisconsin. And, you know, you word it that way as you did so well, people go and jump in.
Yeah. So there were so many options. Like, I don't even think I really saw too many repeats, but I did see a couple people say Culver's.
I actually
just had that last night. Right. Like, it's cool if you don't want to go get some to-go food from a restaurant. But I have my own personal favorite at in Milwaukee Public Market. It's called St. Paul's Fish Company, and they have really great perch.
All right. I got a guy here named Nate who gets a gold star for putting down my dad, which that was very nice. But I mean, look through these, and I'm just reading random ones here. The Eagles Club in Merrill, there's Pine Ridge in Stone Lake, there's Helsing's Bar up in Radisson, Cousins in Haugen, Kate's Bar in Barron. You've got places in Loganville, Thorpe, Stoddard, Plum City, Friendship, Merrill, Wabino. This is amazing. And honestly, it would take a lot of work, but we could do worse than to make a map or even a guidebook out of this and tell people, you know, go get a stamp from as many of these places as you can. And, but don't go to all of them, or you'll end up looking like the guy in the AI cartoon.
Oh no, don't make that come true.
No, but yeah, so many great options. I hope folks go look at that, especially the Facebook version of that post. And for that, just go over to Up North News WI. Sharita Booker, thanks so much, as always, for kicking off our day with letting us know what people are looking at. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, now let's jump into the Brewers update from over the weekend, taking on the Atlanta Braves. And while the Brewers were looking good until the eighth inning, it only took one swing of the bat for the Brewers to miss out on a stellar pitching performance by starter Julio Teheran, who went six innings, giving up just one run on three hits. But reliever Elvis Pagrero's first pitch to Atlanta's Ozzie Albies in the eighth inning was a three-run homer, and it erased the Brewers' 2-1 lead and led to yesterday's 4-3 loss. So the Braves took two out of three over the weekend, but they are still your first place Milwaukee Brewers by a half game over Cincinnati. And look who's here for games tonight, tomorrow, and Wednesday afternoon.
Yep, the Cincinnati Reds. Colin Ray will get the start tonight at American Family Field. You can hear the Brewers in the Richland Center area on WRCE News from the Center, 107.7 FM, 1450 AM. If you're going through the Fox Valley, and you might be for the EAA Air Ventures Show, well, you can hear the Brewers on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 and 1100 AM. And that reminds me, the EAA Air Venture Show is at the top of our, well, it's basically the entire newsletter from the Up North News folks, Christina Laurie and others. There will be an article on the top things to see in Oshkosh this week. Also, the world's greatest aviation celebration couldn't happen without thousands of volunteers taking on roles big and small. Christina Laurie will have a story sitting down with us tomorrow about one special volunteer as she joins us on the program. But again, that newsletter you can sign up for at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. So be on the look for that. And of course, as Sharia just mentioned, Up North News WI for all things social media that we're putting out as well. All right, among the headlines I wanted to get to, because I got a second one in as many weeks, was one of these giant postcards. Maybe you get them as well. It's got it's not election time, but here it is, the black and white picture of Tammy Baldwin as a thumbnail, and then you've got Grandpa's looking a little concerned. He's on the phone. That's because on the backside it says here, while the Biden administration blocks access to life-saving drugs, 28 Senate Democrats want to give government even more control over your health care. Tell Senator Baldwin to abandon the Smart Prices Act now. Paid for by the 60-plus Association. What is the 60-plus Association, and what is the Smart Prices Drug Act? I'm sure they think they're getting a lot of mileage with these giant postcards. So let's look into this, shall we? The 60 Plus Association was founded in 1992 as a seniors advocacy group with a free enterprise, less government, less taxes approach to senior issues. They describe themselves as the conservative alternative to the AARP. 60 Plus has sought to privatize Social Security, end the federal estate tax, because billionaires need fewer taxes, right? And strengthen gun rights. That's apparently a big priority for the 60-plus conservative set. They oppose aspects of healthcare reform, federal energy standards, and tax increases, according to the website DSmog. They spent millions of dollars trying to tell people in 2009 that the Affordable Care Act would cause people to lose access to doctors, treatments, and life-saving drugs. And so what is this Smart Prices Act that these conservative elders are so opposed to? Well, it has to do with the Inflation Reduction Act. And we've talked a few times on the program here about how Medicare, starting very, very soon, can finally use its bulk pricing power to negotiate for lower prices for you, for your prescription drugs. That should have been a gimme in 2003, 20 years ago, when Medicare Part D was created, but Republicans set it up to say that Medicare could not negotiate with Big Pharma. The drug companies had much more power to set the prices, and guess where they set the prices, and guess what that did to profits, and guess what it did to seniors' pocketbooks. And so now, all these years later, Democrats over the past 2 years, when they controlled both houses of Congress, were able to finally end that ban. And the Smart Pricing Act, the point of this giant postcard, is something that Senator Tammy Baldwin and other Senate Democrats have sponsored that would say, okay, it's fine that they can do that for some prescription drugs. How about more? How about more prescription drugs and biologics and others? And not just for people Medicare, 65 plus, but maybe 50 plus. Again, all under the guise of something most conservatives claim to be in favor of. Capitalism is all about the economics of the market having to pay for prices based on things like buying in bulk. You buy more, you pay less. And yet, for some reason, the 60 Plus Association and others do not want you to have that bulk pricing freedom on behalf of the government when it's negotiating prices for seniors who have worked their entire lives and now count on Medicare for the things they need to keep them healthy and save their lives. All right, coming up next, we'd love to have your phone calls. If you saw either Barbie or Oppenheimer over the weekend, we'll get Aaron's review on one of those movies. We'll talk about just how many people went to go see them. We'll also talk about Twitter continuing to circle the drain and so much more still ahead on this Monday morning on Up North News Radio. We'll be back in just a bit.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
This is Aerosmith, and we'll talk more in a few minutes about why we're talking about that particular Beatles remake and a few others coming up in our daily music break and history lesson. We also played Pam Tillis a little earlier. We'll tell you why. Again, coming up in just about 15 minutes or so. But first, we've got to talk movies. We've got to talk Barbie. We've got to talk Oppenheimer. And if you would like to share your own thoughts on one or the other or both, 844-967-2789 is your chance to tell folks all across Wisconsin that they should or should not see it because there was something you liked about it. No spoiler alerts. We just don't know if we won the war and if, you know, Barbie continued to be popular with Ken. But those spoiler alerts notwithstanding, Barbenheimer, as people are calling the mashup, was a spinner of box office gold. The Associated Press writes, Greta Gerwig's Barbie and Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer brought moviegoers back to the theaters in record numbers this weekend, vastly overperforming the already glowing projections and giving a glimmer of hope to the lagging business amid a sobering backdrop of strikes, which leads me to ask, is this the final big weekend for Hollywood executives that are trying to find some way to crush writers and replace them with AI and outlast, you know, actors and, of course, the directors and everybody else who, by and large, supports, you know, the human beings who are working in the Hollywood industry. Which of those movies got the top spot? Probably not difficult to guess that it was Barbie, done by Warner Brothers. A massive $155 million in ticket sales from North American theaters, surpassing the Super Mario Brothers movie and every other Marvel movie this year as the biggest opening of the year, and breaking the first weekend record for a film directed by a woman. Meanwhile, Oppenheimer from Universal also soared past expectations, taking in $80 million, marking Nolan's biggest non-Batman debut and one of the best ever starts for an R-rated motion picture. Sorry, I lost my place there. An R-rated biographical drama. It's also the first time ever that one movie opened to more than $100 million and another movie opened to more than $80 million in the same weekend. When it's all settled, it'll likely turn out to be the fourth biggest box office weekend of all time, with about $300 million industry-wide spent on movie tickets this past weekend, all in a marketplace that is increasingly curving toward an intellectual property-driven winner-take-all battle between executives and the people who put these movies together. The Barbenheimer phenomenon may have started as a good-natured competition between two aesthetic opposites, but as many hoped, both movies benefited in the end. The only real casualty, the AP says, is Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, which, despite strong reviews and a healthy opening weekend, fell 64% in its second weekend, adding only about $20 million in additional sales this past weekend. still bringing its domestic total after two weekends to $119 million. The president of Warner Brothers Domestic Distribution, Jeff Goldstein, says, "It is a joyous time in the world. This is history in so many ways. I think this marketing campaign is one for the ages that people will be talking about forever." Which raises a good question. Was it the marketing campaign that actually got people in to watch the movie, or were people going to go see one or the other of these anyway? It's all about, how much do you build up expectations? Mr. Sommers, you did take in the Barbie movie. You will eventually get to Oppenheimer. So why don't you be first to share with us the Civic Media Radio Network review of the Barbie movie?
It was good.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay.
I'm just going to sip my coffee while you try to think of some other words to say about
it. Yeah, I have other words. So first of all, the right-wingers who are boycotting the movie, it's probably for the best, because if they go, they're just going to get very angry and probably disrupt things, because it is not subtle and it's very feminist. So earlier when you said, "Is Barbie still interesting to Ken?" I was like, clearly you haven't seen it.
I guess not. Okay.
Because at the beginning, it says that, every day is an amazing day in Barbie land for Barbie, because she wakes up, she says hi to all her homegirls. They all hang out and run the world, being, astronauts, physicists, the president, all these other things. Ken only has a good day if Barbie looks at him.
Yeah, that sums up the fragility of today's male ego on the parts of some people very, very well. I like this. We'll come back to your full review in a minute, but it reminded me that somebody got all the comments from furious men on the interwebs who gave one-star reviews of Barbie and took a portion of their venom and put it up on a Barbie poster. So, the ads where it's the movie poster, but then a critic's review is highlighted, across the top of it. Here are some of them. Just imagine every one of them is on a Barbie poster, and there's Ryan Gosling and Margot Robbie as Barbie and Ken. The big Barbie logo at the top, a beautiful blue sky, and it says, "Barbie, an alienating, dangerous, and perverse film," says one man who gave it one stars. Here's another one. "Barbie, the feminist agenda will kill us all." Here's another. "Barbie, they won't be happy until we are all gay." And one more. "Barbie, a pink acid trip that feels like being slapped by lots of confusingly attractive people." The fact that anybody would take the time to go and give Barbie a one-star review and then put something like that up, just I don't know what's in their head to crave that kind of attention from a certain subset of humanity.
I think I do. It's just like when somebody is told, white people are responsible for these atrocities, and they're like, "But I'm white and I didn't do it," and they get mad and defensive. It's just the same thing in this movie, where it says negative things, whether directly or implying them, about men and their role in society, and they're like, "But I'm a man and I'm not this insufferable." Yes, you are.
Yeah, actually, Ken. Would Ken be the equivalent of Karen? Did we ever come up with a male equivalent of that in this day and age?
I don't know, but if this movie is anything to go by, I think we can use Ken.
Okay. Okay. See, now I'm intrigued. I know I was going to see it anyway, because like I said, both daughters are in town this week. They both very much grew up on Barbie. So I'm sure that'll be coming along. If any of you saw it and would like to tell us what you think of, is your review in line with Aaron's on the Barbie movie? 844-967-2789. And I'm also interested in some of the reaction to the Oppenheimer movie, because it gets to that whole notion of, the nuclear bomb, the atomic bomb, and developing it, and of course, whether using it was necessary to end the war in Japan. And I'm sure there's a bit of a morality tale in there. And it seems like there are folks that are trying to engage in, I don't know the right term for it, not revisionist history, but they want to isolate the horrors of the bomb and separate it from all that had happened up to that point, that there was still a world war going on. And did they treat that debate, you know, fairly? And again, fairly is subjective, but, you know, I'd love to know people's thoughts on that as they go along too. And I don't know if that's part of what interests you about the movie, Aaron, or if it's just simply the drama of racing the clock to get this thing developed before, you know, the Nazis or the Soviets or anybody else.
Yeah, that's definitely also part of it. There is a lot going on in the world at the time. And one thing that I've been seeing a lot online on what is currently still known as Twitter is that the narrative that we hear about the testing of the atomic bomb in New Mexico is that, oh, it was a big uninhabited space, when mm-hmm. that's not entirely true, and that a lot of people were forced out of the area without really being given any other option.
Good. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was going to be my next point as well, is it's not just the impact on people in Japan, but yes, in the desert. And also, I was reading for the history segment today about the post-war atomic testing that went on in the South Pacific on Bikini Island and others. And it's, again, it's not like it was entirely uninhabited, so you can't pretend those folks didn't exist. There was an impact.
Yeah, and from... I don't know if the movie addresses that. I imagine not, because that's not the focus, but mm-hmm. I think it's something that we should be aware of.
Well, it will continue to be debated in places like Twitter, or do we say X? Are they changing the name to X, or is that just the new logo instead of the bird in overnight developments here?
Well, if you go to x.com, it reroutes you to Twitter. So I think they're changing the name.
Serious X.com?
Yep.
Oh, boy. All right. So, yeah, overnight, another one of the headlines that I woke up to was noting that Elon Musk has replaced the friendly blue bird that had been a Twitter logo, you know, from the beginning, in a major rebranding of the platform that he bought for $44 million last year. He replaced it with a white X on a black background. And let's see if there's any description here. Musk had asked fans for logo ideas. He described it as minimalist art deco that will be refined. And soon we shall bid adieu to the Twitter brand and gradually all the birds.
Elon Musk, this is not going to fix your idiocy and your inability to operate a global like social media platform.
He loves the letter X, of course. He gave a space X. He founded a company, a startup called X.com that later would become known as PayPal. He loves to collect things with the letter X on there. And I guess I read someplace once that he was told in one of these early meetings that, you know, X was a stupid idea. And then he's been cheesed off about that ever since. And
oh, I'm sure.
Determined to change everything. And he has certainly changed Twitter. And I am not joking one bit that X marks the spot where Twitter is circling the drain. It's been shedding users. It has been a failure by any measure of a corporate acquisition. While Threads had a massive first couple of weeks, things have stabled off there, but it is very much an alternative now to Twitter. And so this is why we can't have nice things, because egotistical billionaires have to come in and spend their money to either ruin platforms that were disseminating news or buying elections or whatever the case may be. This is what we're facing now, is a world where we need to escape, either in the adventures of a doll like Barbie, or we need to escape into the adventures of racing to develop the atomic bomb, because there's not as much that's nearly happy and joyful to talk about. Hey, we will even take solace in thinking about the author Ernest Hemingway, going back that far, in part because a white bearded man from Wisconsin won the National Hemingway Lookalike Contest in Key West over the weekend here. Garrett Marshall is a retired broadcast engineer from Madison who prevailed on Saturday night at Sloppy Joe's Bar, a frequent hangout of Hemingway when he lived in Key West during the 1930s.
Aaron, I know you've seen, if you haven't seen pictures of this particular contest, you've seen Ernest Hemingway enough times to know, I don't know why we even bothered to have a contest when it feels like, I don't know, every fifth guy in the Midwest kind of looks like Ernest Hemingway with the thinning silver hair and the gray beard. It's exactly a unique look.
You know? Yeah, it does kind of seem pointless.
I mean, I'm looking at the photo of the finalists, including the fellow from Madison. And again, they would all aptly describe themselves as devastatingly handsome, but any one of them could have won the contest, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So congratulations to Garrett Marshall, who not only won it, but won it on his 68th birthday. So good work out of you. Let's take a break for today's history lesson and music break. All coming up in just a bit. You're up north. Uninitiated, this would be Earth, Wind, and Fire. Got to get you into my life, into my life. Got to get you into my life, into my life. Sounding nothing like the Beatles original, but a really nice song in its own right, and pretty sure it was a Grammy Award-winning tune as well. It was on the soundtrack to the film Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. The attempt to tell the story of a few Beatles songs became a film that opened on this day in 1978, and it tanked hard. It was savaged by critics. It became a legendary Hollywood flop, even though it had Earth, Wind, and Fire, the Bee Gees, Aerosmith, who we played earlier with a Beatles tune, Billy Preston, Peter Frampton. It was directed by Michael Schultz. It starred an ensemble cast led by Peter Frampton and the Bee Gees, depicting the loosely constructed story of a band as they wrangle with the music industry and battle evil forces bent on stealing their instruments and corrupting their hometown of Heartland. There were songs provided as dialogue to carry the story. Most of the spoken lines that clarified the plot were passed on by George Burns. So maybe, again, George Burns, great comedic actor, especially from the, you know, black and white era. Guess he couldn't quite carry a Beatles-themed movie. However, the Aerosmith and Earth, Wind, and Fire cover tunes of Beatles tunes did all right and live on to this day. Let's see, that was 1978. Let's go back a couple of years. The number one song this day in 1976 was from the Manhattans.
Let's just kiss and say goodbye.
I had to meet you here today.
The Dust Bowl heat wave was reaching its peak on this week in 1935. Temperatures hit 104 in Milwaukee, 109 in Chicago. This is the anniversary of the infamous pine tar incident of 1983. When George Brett, playing for the Kansas City Royals, had a game-winning home run nullified after the New York Yankees challenged the amount of pine tar that was on his bat. The number one song this day in 1982 came to us from the movie Rocky III by Survivor. Do we really need to play anything else from this song? You'll know, right? Eye of the Tiger. Michael Richards is 74 years old today, the actor, comedian, Kramer. Linda Carter, Wonder Woman from the 1970s, is in the 70s herself now. Linda Carter is 72 years old today. Singer Pam Tillis, we heard from her earlier. She is 66 today. And we'll hear a little bit later on from Jennifer Lopez, Jenny from the Block, actress, singer, dancer, is 54 years old today. And in this week in 1987, the somewhat fictionalized biography of Latin rock star Ritchie Valens opened in the U.S. with this theme. It was generally well received.
especially the soundtrack by Los Lobos there. Lou Diamond Phillips starred as Valens, who died in the infamous plane crash that killed Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper. Should have noted a few minutes earlier there when talking about the Beatles. It was on this day in 1967. The Beatles took out a full-page ad in the Times of London calling for the legalization of marijuana. It was in response to a friend of theirs being sentenced to 9 months in jail for marijuana possession. The Beatles full-page ad said that, quote, "The law against marijuana is immoral in principle and unworkable in practice." Something I was not familiar with until reading about it to see what happened on this particular day in history.
Perhaps unfamiliar, but certainly unsurprised.
Oh, yeah. No, there's... That was not the surprise. The surprise is that I hadn't heard about it before. I was my inner history nerd was not treating me nicely, to be honest there. Let's see. Over the time that I'd taken the long weekend, we had headlines as well about a potential Republican Senate candidate. A story at the heart of an article by Dan Bice of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, with the headline, "Possible U.S. Senate candidate cannot explain his spotty voting record, his positions on gun control, and diversity, equity, and inclusion." And it was all about a suburban Milwaukee businessman, Scott Mayer, who has said that if he runs for Senate, and he's not really sure he wants to run, especially if he's the only one willing to step up, but he might be willing to step up, he says. But he says if so, he'll be a different type of candidate. And that's true in some ways when, as Bice notes, Mayer hasn't voted in many recent elections. He didn't vote in the 2020 presidential election or the 2020 presidential primary. He said he couldn't even recall whether he voted or not. He has given money to numerous Republican presidential candidates over the past 20 years, except former President Donald Trump. He's written on social media that people with mental illnesses should not own guns, but when asked, was not able to say whether he favors stricter background checks. And in the past, Mayer has been a big advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives in private business, but is unclear whether others should do it as well. Or as he said to Bice, "If it works for business, why wouldn't it work in other places? I would think so, but you know, Dan, I'm not even a candidate for anything, right?" Which is, you know, kind of code for there have been no consultants or handlers to help gussy up my responses to pretty basic questions like this. So Mayer has said previously he doesn't want to run because he's the only one left, but that is certainly a possibility. He didn't vote in 2018's gubernatorial election between Republican incumbent Scott Walker and Democrat Tony Evers. He sat out the primary and the general in the U.S. Senate races won by Tammy Baldwin, the same person that he might be challenging in 2024. And, you know, Mayer said at the time he didn't have any excuses. He said he didn't consider casting an absentee ballot, and he only recently began taking an interest in a possible political career, so it's not like he was making sure he had a spotless record. Well, that misses the point. You don't vote in every election because you might run for something someday and you want to have a spotless voting record. You vote every time as a matter of citizenship, as a matter of having a say into who is going to be your senator, who is going to be your president. There's more to democracy than writing checks, but he has written checks. He's given more than $125,000 to Republican candidates, including $20,000 to conservative Supreme Court candidate Dan Kelly this last time around. So he's aware of politics. He has a passing interest in it, but is still working to refine the positions if indeed he decides to challenge Tammy Baldwin next year. Much more in our next hour, including a White House visit from a Wisconsin legislator about affordable daycare next. You're up north.